This episode of Fermented Adventure the Podcast is sponsored by Brewskits, handcrafted dog treats made from spent beer grains, oats, barley, and rye. No chemical preservatives, a great source of fiber, and packed with protein. Visit brewskits.com to see the full selection of treats for your dog and your cat. Receive 15% off, no minimum purchase, on your first order by typing in lowercase FA2024 at checkout. Cheers! Hello, ladies and gentlemen, craft spirit enthusiasts, and those interested in the intoxicating world of craft distilleries, cideries, meaderies, wineries, and the occasional foray into breweries. It's Rich Shane, and welcome to Fermented Adventure, the podcast, where we bring you the fascinating people that are making the mash, fermenting, distilling, bottling, pouring, and delivering to you some of the finest libations in the world. Before we get started, here are a few housekeeping items. Thank you for bringing the podcast into wherever you are and whatever you're doing. We truly are grateful that you have chosen to listen and make us part of your day. It would mean the world to us if you left a 5-star review. This helps us climb in the rankings, and it makes it easier for others to find us. Don't hesitate to leave us your comments as well. If the podcast didn't meet your expectations, tell us why. We're always striving to improve. You can find us at fermentedadventure.com. We are on Instagram and Facebook as Fermented Adventure. Email us at fermentedadventure@gmail.com. All right, FA Nation, let's meet our guests. We're here at the Inn at Grace Winery. I'm Rich Shane, and this is Fermented Adventure, the podcast. And today I'm joined by Andrew, Corey, and Rachel. Thank you for joining us. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Rich.
We had the pleasure of visiting with you at the Chamber of Commerce ribbon cutting for your new space that just opened up. And we came to find out that the Inn at Grace Winery has been in our backyard 15 minutes away for all these years. And we found this gem. We didn't know you existed. So how did the Inn at Grace Winery get started?
Oh, that's a loaded question. The bed and breakfast was the first established business on the property, and it's been a business since the late 80s. But fast forward through our history, and it was picked up by a lady named Grace Levine. Unfortunately, she passed away. She left the property to her brother, Christopher Levine, who's the current owner and operator of this property. When he inherited it, he wasn't, you know, necessarily looking to run a B&B. But he decided to come and take a look and see what the potential was. And so he did that. And here we are today. He's the one who established all of our additional cottages and put in the winery, put in the vineyard, changed the name in honor of his sister. So that's where the name Grace Winery comes from, for her. And then we do, you know, the events and all the other things that we do on site. He kind of was the spearhead to bring that to light.
Well, I like how you just, and we do the events. But the grounds here are spectacular. And that new event space that you opened up is majestic. I mean, for what you do for weddings and, like I said, all these things that were in our backyard and didn't know this really existed. And then we taste your wines. You also said, Rachel, that, he put some vineyards in and then started making some wine. Talk about the impetus of wanting to put in vineyards and the idea of creating wine here.
Well, the story I was told was that they might have had a few too many glasses themselves, and they're sitting on the back porch of the manor house, and they looked to their cornfield that was being leased to a farmer, and they looked at their dilapidated barn, and they thought, what the heck are we going to do with this place? And maybe after a few too many glasses, they got the idea to turn this place into a winery themselves. So they thought the barn could make that perfect aesthetic for a winery, and the corn could now become vines. So back in 2007, they planted those grapes, and that's kind of where it all began. So,
no experience in winemaking, no experience in agriculture, at least growing grapes. Where did that information come to, or did they bring somebody in, or they just said, hey, it wasn't like Amazon was around where you could just deliver that to the door. How did that mean? Because your wines are really great wines. So that doesn't happen just by, oh, yeah, we'll open a winery.
Well, I would say one thing that's been very consistent is the demand for quality that Chris puts on all of us. You know, he gives us a lot of freedom in what we're able to do, what we can, the events that we hold, the type of wines that we have here. But above all else, is it has to meet his level of quality. And because of that, we have a lot of free range, but it still has to match his goal and his picture for the place.
Yeah. Talk about the grapes that you're growing in the vineyard.
Yep. So we have Pinot Gris, Cabernet Franc, Chardonnay, Merlot, and we just planted Sauvignon Blanc. So that's coming online for the first time this year. So,
Corey, speak to the experiences that you're bringing to the winery and how you impact what goes on here day to day.
Yeah, so my kind of background outside of the winery, outside of, you know, hospitality, in this sense, this parameter, I went to school at Newman University right here in Delaware County. And I got my bachelor's and master's in sports business. So kind of taking what I've learned in college with a number of sports organizations and kind of applying that to the wine side. Obviously, we have really, you know, fine wine, like you said, Rich. And kind of prior to me coming here, we didn't have really anyone to go out, you know, out to restaurants, out to facilities, and kind of partner with them just to kind of grow our brand while enhancing theirs. So kind of day-to-day, my job is coming in, trying to find partners to work with that fit our brand, that fit our aesthetic, that, you know, elevate the quality of Delaware County and parts of Chester County. And then, you know, adding that to going to events like farmers markets and, you know, more community-based events to just reiterate the fact that there is, you know, really fine quality wine in PA. And like you said, to your point, we're a bit of a hidden gem. So just kind of, you know, telling people where we're at. But like you said, once they get here, it's you know, they're amazed.
Well, you said you had this sports connection or sports background, and it really excited me in a way. And I guess I'm just taken back to my childhood to know that ex-Philly pitcher Jim Cott resided on the property at one time.
Yeah.
And that this has that history.
Yeah. Him and his wife were the ones that actually started what was called Sweetwater Farm. So the first original bed and breakfast that was on this property. It was five rooms run out of the what we call our manor house, that large stone building that you first see when you pull up. But the two of them were the ones that established the B&B business. Before that, the property was just personal residential. They had horses. This used to be a barley malting barn. So we say that we keep making alcohol in just a different form now in this barn. So continuing on the history is something that's important to us as well. Is when you look around our property, when you came to our new barn, you see that we like to restore the history that's there. We don't necessarily like to tear down and start new. We like to establish the history of the Delaware County area and the Brandywine Valley.
Well, you talk about the history and you talk about malting and barley, and Andrew, you and I were talking down where that millstone is, and the idea that this was a farm where, like many farms in the area, they used what they had, they used everything that they had, and knowing that this is a malt house, or at one time it was, I'm going to put Laura Fields of the Delaware Valley Fields Foundation, and she's a historian based in Pennsylvania, and I'm going to put her on this to find out whatever was maybe distilled here or where the grains came by and maybe help add to that history. Because if anybody would find out, she would. And that would be more exciting to what adds to the flavor of this gorgeous property. Rachel, what of the experience, what in winemaking, or what is it that you do day to day here at the winery?
Yeah, I do a little bit of everything. You know, so my official title is the assistant general manager. I work side by side with my husband, who's a general manager. And, you know, because we do a little bit of everything, we're a boutique hotel, we're a winery, we're a tasting room, we're a restaurant, and we're an event venue. I manage all of that on a day-to-day basis and making sure that the people I have in those positions, in the leadership roles, in the day-to-day operations, are doing the things they need to do. And then that leaves me to do fun things like throw a ribbon cutting for the chamber and kind of get, again, get our name out there, because a common phrase that we hear is, I didn't know you existed, or I live right down the street and I've never known what you do around here. So we're just trying to really get that out. We're not trying to keep it a secret. We want people here. We want people to come and enjoy all that there is to do here. So I'm just out there trying to spread the word along with, you know, my team.
So for you, Andrew, what experiences that you've had prior that have brought you to this property and this winery?
Yeah, so I am the winemaker here. I've been here for 6 years. I did not come from a winemaking family. My mother orders Chardonnay everywhere she goes, and she hates Chardonnay, but it's the only one she knows. So, and I drink it out of a box typically, but growing up. But typically, where I come from is I was working in agriculture. I was working on a fruit farm. And when the season was over, a buddy of mine asked me if I wanted to go to New Zealand. Having nothing to do after the harvest, I said, sure, why not? I went and lived over there for 4 months. I got to live in the wine region. I had no say on any of the wines, thank God at that point. But I got really interested in vineyards. So I came back. I am born and raised in Pennsylvania. So I came back to Pennsylvania looking for a vineyard to work in. I found one close to Gettysburg, where I'm from, and worked my way up. And a few years later, became an assistant winemaker. And a few years after that, became the head winemaker here at Grace Winery. So it's the abbreviated version. So
in the experience of wine, and Andrew, you talk about, hey, it wasn't what I was interested at first, but you learn, you become refined, you become educated. I mean, I think that's for everything that Dawn and I get to experience, that's what becomes even more of that stronger connection when we learn about the making process. So talk about, you know, we're here basically in southern Pennsylvania. Talk about the wine growing season. Talk about the opportunities that you have here to stay true to your roots. And one of the things you said to me, which is really key, which this is limestone and the filtration system and how it's raining outside.
Yeah.
I'm sure the grapes are happy now. They need a drought, as you pointed out later. But talk about the growing season, or talk about the wine production here.
Yeah, so the southeastern part of Pennsylvania, Maryland, northern Delaware is some of the best growing region in all of the East Coast. Obviously, there's going to be some pockets here and there that grow really well things. You know, obviously, the Finger Lakes, they grow their Riesling really well. But we grow Cabernet Franc better. Now, someone else might have an argument with that. But in Virginia grows their Vignier or Petit Mansang better than we do. So it's about picking the right grapes, picking the right varieties specifically for our region. We get plenty of growing degree days, which are key for making sure your grapes are nice and ripe. We are warmer than New York. And we're less wet than Virginia. So they have more of mildew issues, mold issues on their grapes. So we have a little bit better of a growing season in general. Obviously, some years are better than others. The first year I was here was not the greatest year ever. It was not great as a first-time head winemaker, but we persisted. We are sitting on limestone soil, which is great for our drainage. You know, we are getting a deluge currently, but it's not really an issue. Our vineyard, after a short period of time, will dry out pretty well, which is what we want for our grapes. The phrase is they want their roots a little bit wet. They don't want to be completely soaked in it. And then come harvest, you know, we want a little bit of rain throughout the season. Nothing crazy. We don't want bacteria to start growing on the grapes, as with any food product. And then come harvest, the ideal situation was what we had about 2 years ago, where we pretty much had a drought from, you know, we'll say August up through mid-October. After we pick our grapes, it can pour every single day after, for all I care. We really want a lot of that sun to really ripen that fruit. And we don't want the rain to come and produce molds and mildews and areas for bacteria to grow on the grapes. Once we do that, we have to pick immediately to make sure that, you know, the fruit doesn't deteriorate. So we have the highest quality fruit to make the highest quality wine.
brewskits. Beer, grain, dog bones, brewskits. Your dog will go wild, brewskits. Beer, grain, dog bones, a healthy alternative for your pup.
Brewskits are all natural and made in the USA. Visit brewskit.com. That's BREWSCUIT.com.
You mentioned this area is warmer than, let's say, New York or Vermont or the Finger Lakes region. Have you seen anything in your growing techniques or your experience with the grapes right now that have been affected by any climate change?
It's mostly about what we can grow. So some of the varietals that were being grown were really cold hardy grapes 40 years ago, 50 years ago. And now we're starting to broach onto some warmer climate grapes with mild success. And that's only getting more and more as the years go on. A grape variety like Syrah, which is known very well throughout Australia, there it's known as Shiraz, is a great warm climate grape. It doesn't do super well in our climate, but the fact is that people are growing it at all is something that could not have been said 40 years ago. So warmer climate grapes are coming in. We're also some of the grapes that were being planted here are doing significantly better. One of the grapes I always highlight is Cabernet Franc. It grows fantastic in the whole mid-Atlantic region, but specifically in southeastern PA. I kind of consider it our lighthouse grape. It is the one that brings people in, and then they come to try everything else. We didn't have it 1 year because we did not believe that the quality lived up to qualities of vintages past. So we may have the flexibility to make that choice that we are not putting it in bottle this year. We decided to blend it with other varieties. And with that, we had a lot of people come in and specifically ask us, when is your Cabernet Franc coming back? Do you plan on having Cabernet Franc again? What happened to your Cabernet Franc? I loved your Cabernet Franc. And I hear this from a lot of vineyards in this area. So it's not just us, but it grows so well in our area that it is a staple. I always recommend if you go to a new winery in this region to go try it out, to test it out. It is the significant red. On whites, we can grow really almost everything and everything really well. For us, we grow Pinot Gris and Chardonnay. They are very consistent. Our Chardonnay is typically stainless steel with a little bit of barrel age. Well, it's about a 50-50 blend of barrel age and stainless steel to kind of give it a little bit more of that old world vibe. And when I say old world, it's more of a French European technique. The main goal of that is that we have a little bit of oak. We add some character, we add some body, but we don't want to take away from the fruitiness of the wine. I don't typically like that big buttery oaky Chardonnay, and that's not what really does well here on the East Coast, specifically in the Mid-Atlantic. So we want to make sure our practices in the vineyard match the grapes out in the vines.
You're talking about all those different vines, vineyards, grapes, and as what you're able to grow here now. Traditionally, this area was a sweeter wine producing area. And I'm curious, in the mindset of even still the customer, are they still asking for, do you have a Riesling or do you have that sweeter profile wine on your menu? And what's that conversation like?
Yeah, so we definitely have those people. I mean, I always make the joke, my mom is a sweet wine person. She never will drink any of our wine here. I always like the analogy that wine's like coffee. You can really have it any way you like. There's no rhyme or reason. You can have a ton of sugar and cream or black. It's really, up to people's preference. So we kind of have to plan for that. We know our establishment is kind of a higher end, fine dining establishment. So our wines kind of align with that. We have come out recently with a semi-sweet red to kind of, fit that portfolio, especially if we have people coming in for events that aren't specifically coming in just for tasting room, that might not know our wines, might have a different palate. So it's really just kind of knowing the clientele. But I think with enough wineries in the area, that's when you're able to kind of really lock into your own brands. You can kind of set yourself apart from those because you still know that those certain wineries are out there for those certain people. But for us, we see this area definitely as more of like a finer wine kind of destination, region. And then just kind of off that, that kind of reflects, you know, our brand and such. So there's always talks. There's always talks about we should do more sweet wine. We've talked about doing the sweet white as well. But I think for right now, you know, the dry wines for us really hit, and kind of, you know, just kind of reevaluating the markets and, you know, kind of trends in that sense to figure out how to go forward.
And through the years, we've also seen ourselves really define who we are with a lot of our customers. So we don't typically get too many people coming in anymore saying, oh, do you have a sweet wine? Because they know we're a dry wine establishment. Again, we do have a semi-sweet, and I don't have necessarily anything wrong with sweet wines. I think some of the best wines in the world are sweet wines. It's just who we cater to is more to a dry wine winery. I think Corey made a really good point. There's a lot of really good options in our area that do have some sweet wines and do them really well. So there's plenty of room in the swimming pool for all of us. So we'll let them kind of tackle that and do it as well as they can.
Well, Corey, I'm going to add cream to my wine now based on what you suggested, because I've never done that before. But if I can add cream to my bourbon, why can't I add cream to my wine? So we'll see what happens with that. We've talked about wine. Let's try some wine.
That sounds good.
Pardon the interruption. Thank you so much for listening to Fermented Adventure, the podcast. Could you do us a favor? Hit that follow button. It makes it easier for others to find us, and it helps us climb in the rankings. Take a screenshot of the podcast, post it, tag us, and let everyone know that you listen to the Fermented Adventure podcast. Now, back to our podcast. We're back, and I have a white wine. We have a white wine in front of us. What are we drinking, or what are we going to drink?
Yeah, this is our 2022 Pinot Gris from our estate vineyard. It's got really nice minerality to it, some light fruit. The lemon-lime really sticks through, as well as I was tasting this yesterday as this is going out to our wine club members shortly. It has some nice kiwi notes to it, a little bit of grapefruit, you might be able to pick up on the aroma and taste. So Rachel said this not that long ago, but this is a great beginner wine. This is a great starter wine. This is, and I don't mean that in respects to you don't know anything about wine, but this is a good wine to start your day with, start your drinking experience with, adventure, I should say.
It's a good morning glass of wine.
It's a good morning glass, yeah. No, I always go with this.
The word I used was gateway wine.
Gateway. That's a way better way to put it. Not your breakfast wine.
It's kind of similar to what Corey was saying, and I've used the coffee analogy before. You know, some coffee drinkers, they start out drinking a lot of sugar and cream, and then they tend to end up on the just strictly black side. And so kind of the same with wine. You're going to start out as a sweet drinker and potentially work your way into the drier ones. And I think that our Pinot and our Chardonnay, our Rosé, and our Sauv Blancs are those good kind of gateways to get people into trying those drier wines that they might not necessarily have thought to try before because either of, you know, stigmas of too much oak or too much something that they don't necessarily like. But I think that these kind of helps. When you come with a group of friends and a person who has a sweet preference, I generally suggest either the Pinot or the Rosé is something that's great to share and everyone would enjoy.
One of the aspects that I think I'm becoming more aware of when I do start to try or drink anything, whether it's beer or spirits or wine, is to remind myself or readjust myself to that drinking experience. So we're drinking wine today, and there's a process for drinking wine. I mean, some people, it's pouring, filling, drinking. But reacclimate those, or for somebody listening to the podcast for the first time, how should we be drinking wine?
Yeah, so I think there's the super snooty way, and then there's pouring it out of a spout in a box, and then there's somewhere in between that's probably the best way to do it. I always go with the first sip is the one that I really care about, the first and second sip. What you do is you take a look at the wine, you look at the color of it, you try to notice how light it is, if it has any brown characteristics that can give you an idea of its age. So the browner it is, the more oxidized. This is a young Pinot Gris. It shouldn't have any of those notes to it. It should have a nice golden, more of a straw color, actually less gold, more of a straw-like color towards it. And then you can swirl it around. You might get some legs on it. This one will have less legs as it falls rather quickly. And the main reason is for that is it's slightly less viscous. So people always talk about, oh, look at the legs on the wine, is not a sign of quality. It's more of a sign of the viscosity of the wine. So you can see whether it has a higher alcohol content, whether it has a higher sugar content. Both of those can affect that. Next, you really want to dive your nose into it, really take a good smell of it, get the aromas, try to tie them together. Aromas are usually are considered what's tied closest to your memory. So, as Rachel's husband Cody is our fantastic taster here, he will he'll smell and be like, "Boy, this reminds me of a carpet shop that I visited 11 years ago. There's one person was standing there, and I could smell." So, it's always interesting what other people can pick out. Like I said, for this Pinot Gris, you really want to get citrus notes. Kiwi is common, lemon, lime. You might even get a little minerality to it. So think of that limestone. Think of a rainy day, just like today, and that smell of a thunderstorm afterwards, that little bit of an ozone smell is what it's known as. Those are all things you can pick up in wines. A lot of times white wines get discredited as kind of a beginner wine or lower quality, but if you look at the flavor wheel, which is essentially a wheel that has it breaks out all the different characteristics of the smells of a wine, white wine is typically considered much more complex than a red wine. Red wines have those really strong, powerful accents and big, bold flavors, but white wines a lot of times will have those delicate notes and have much more of them. Obviously, that's not for every single wine, but as a generality, it's easy to say. Pinot Gris is also a good one to start with at any winery because there's not much you can hide it in. It is you typically don't oak it. It is early to release. There's nothing really to add to it. So it's essentially the grapes, the yeast, nutrients, and the harvest. That's really all that can add to a Pinot Gris. And if a winery can do a Pinot Gris well, then it should set you up well for the rest of the tasting. I remember being told by a brewer one time, I asked him, how can you tell if a brewery's good when you first enter it? Like, where should you start? And they said, you should always start with the lightest beer there because there's nothing to hide it. While something like an IPA can potentially hide defects in a beer, oak and sugar can hide defects in a wine. So, as examples. So, you want to try with your lighter, maybe more acidic, more fruit-forward, light white wines to get a general early assessment of what the quality is of that winery.
That was an amazing, enjoyable tour through the nose, the experience of drinking wine and this wine. And as you're pointing out, because I love those suggestions, it's not... Sometimes it's suggesting, oh yeah, I smell that. But it's also acclimating the mind to try to find those things. I still haven't found the kiwi, but it just could be that, my kiwi senses are off today.
Well, I just ate a bunch of kiwi.
So that worked.
So that's how it's – you're noticing it because that's what I just smelled the other day.
Right.
It's kind of a puzzle. Honestly, for winemakers, when I talk to a lot of people in the community – we speak in broader terms, like we'll say more herbaceous or red fruit or dark fruit. Well, what the heck is red fruit? That's not a thing. It gives you an idea, like strawberries are red fruit, cherries are red fruit. So it puts people into a general category. Dark fruit are your blackberries and your blueberries, your brambly style fruits, your plums. So it gives you a general idea, and then it gives the actual consumer, the drinker of the glass of wine, the freedom to be like, well, I actually get blackberries. Oh, you get blackberries? I get raspberries, or I get cherry notes, or something like that nature. So it is very open for everyone to interpret their own ways.
There's a brightness on the nose. I enjoy the acidity.
Mm-hmm. I can see you drinking this in the morning.
The sour notes, the lemon, the lime, to me, this is almost one of those, this is like that thirst quencher, and then I want more.
Yep.
I always think of how can I pair this? What foods can I pair this with? And I'm craving something salty, something like, I don't like to be cliche. Hey, let's put this with the cheese. Yeah. But there is a hard cheese, a salty cheese that I can see this going well. This pairs very well across the board, I'm sure, with a lot of things. And as you said, Rachel, this is your gateway. And I think this is very approachable to anybody that I think what is most important to anybody that, and I don't want to say that there's a reputation or something of Pennsylvania wines, but I think what I would start to challenge people is to do a blind tasting of this, to stick that bottle of this wine in this bottle, in the brown paper bag, and not tell anybody what it is and where it's from. And I think one of the things is they'll be so pleasantly surprised to find out this is from Delco?
Yeah.
Yeah. We say that a lot. I mean, I personally say, you know, the wine industry, while it's an old one, takes some time to adjust to trends or new changes. An example being the screw tops. Generally, that used to be associated with a cheap bottle of wine, but now we know that it's eco-friendly, it's a smarter business decision, all of those kind of things, and it has no bearing on the quality of your wine. Same kind of thing, you know, it just... People take a long time to get adjusted to new things. So, you know, we're out here fighting the Pennsylvania fight and just making sure people know to give it a try and, you know, not just assume that we don't know what we're doing. Because like Andrew said, we're not out trying to be who we're not. We're going to grow what grows well in our region. We're going to make the wine that we can make very well. We're not going to try to be Napa and grow what they can grow because they have a different growing climate. We're going to grow what goes well here in Pennsylvania and showcase that. And that's why we love all the other wineries in our region. We love to support them. We love to talk about that because we want them to do well. If we're all doing well, then we're known as a great wine region versus just one great winery.
Yeah, one thing I'll just as a great example is there's a winery up in the Lehigh Valley who their vignette won a gold out in the San Francisco wine competition, the international competition. There is a Chardonnay just over the line around New Hope that won the same wine competition that people might know from the movie Bottle Shock, where it was California Chardonnays that won every category and blew the French away. And they're like, whoa, great wine can be made in America. Well, a New Jersey wine won that competition not too many years ago. So... and there's plenty of examples all throughout. You know, we've won an international comp. We've won Kelvin Gold, gotten golds in international competitions in the Finger Lakes, and there's tons of other wineries that have succeeded as well. So it doesn't necessarily get as recognized across the board, but there's a lot of good stuff being made in this area.
To your point, overall, I think this is still a young wine producing region.
Yeah.
And you have to go through the trials. You have to go through the cultivating of the grapes, learning how to blend, learning the seasons, and all the things that you're educating yourself about in a day in and day out basis. I just think as the consumer, to what you said, look, if I walked into a winery 10, 15 years ago and I saw all their wines or a wine had a screw top, I'm like more predisposed to say, what are these wines? Or... you know, the idea that I have an expectation of what I believe that wine should be. And, you know, we're walking into your tasting room in a way today. And I can say from the first wine we've had, I want more, not to say, well, if this is what I can expect from the rest of the wines, do I want to stay for the whole tasting?
Yeah.
So that leaves me as the consumer, me as the enjoyer of wine, saying to you at the Inn of Grace Winery, I want more.
love to hear it.
So what's our next wine?
There we go. Into the rosé next, one of our personal favorites. It's also our owner's favorite, so Andrew was testing to make sure that's right on cue.
Now, talk about rosé, because I think, again, I am a rosé fan. Dawn is
yes.
A rosé fan, but I believe it's having its time, and you can speak better to that. Because a lot of ways people were to have said, again, maybe 5 years ago, rosé. Eh.
Yeah.
But now, what are they saying about rosé?
Yeah, rosé is really interesting because a lot of times it was, for lack of better terms, a byproduct of better red wine making. So one of the techniques is it's called Seigneur, and I took Spanish, so I apologize for any French speakers that they might say I'm saying it wrong or got the wrong definition. But essentially it means like to bleed something. And what we would do is we would bleed off the first juice off of the red grape skins. So when you make red wine, you take all the juice and it's sitting on the skins because the skins are what give it that dark red color. So you would bleed the first juice off, which is still very light, very clear, might have a little, some pink notes to it. And what you, the concept there was it was concentrating your skins. It was where a lot of your flavor comes from. So with that concentration, you got a darker, you got a richer red wine. Well, now you add all this excess juice. What are you going to do with that? Well, definitely ferment it. So that's where essentially rosé came from. It's always been popular. Obviously, the most popular was the white Zinfandels and stuff of that nature back in the day. But now the quality of rosés have significantly increased, and the differences across the board are pretty drastic. You know, the California rosé is quite different than what we go for. We go for what's known as more of a Provence style. So that's Provence, France. Very light, very delicate, very crisp, very refreshing focus. Maybe a little bit lighter on the fruit notes. You mentioned the acidity with that Pinot Gris earlier, and I think that's really important. It's what makes people want to come back for that next glass or to have a whole bottle instead of just one. If you think about going back to more of a beer analogy, as a lot of people know beer very well, a Bud Light, you can drink a plenty of those compared to a big heavy stout, which is a little, it's less acidic, it's more flat, it's fuller. You want one of them and then you're usually, I'm good on that. And that's the same thing with a big red. You kind of have one glass and you're like, all right, that did the job. Well, this rosé, that acidity, makes you come back for more.
I was nosing this as you explained that, and all I smell is red fruit. So no, I'm just
there. You go, yeah. Red fruit. There you go.
What? And this is where you talked about the gentleman that can reestablish a location from a nose.
Yeah.
Well, I'm taken back to your event space that you just opened because that's where I had this for the first time.
There you go.
And it actually has such a presence of strawberry to me.
Yeah.
And that from this wine, I don't get as much of the acidity, but what I believe on my nose to expect is a more sweet presentation of a wine on the palate.
Yeah.
And that's not there. But I get this wonderful, as if somebody took a strawberry candle or incense and just was burning it the whole time, because I get that on the nose and I get that on the mouth.
Yeah.
And this goes to just that pleasant, just, I just want to keep sipping and nosing and sipping and nosing and going back and forth.
Yeah, that strawberry note is definitely what I want. I want that to come through. So I'm glad it is. This is definitely one of my favorite rosés I've made. I'm very happy with it. It's almost an equal blend of Merlot and Cabernet Franc from our vineyard and as well as some other local vineyards. Those fruity notes is what I like to come through personally for me. Compared to the lemon lime with the Pinot Gris previously, that strawberry is what I want. So I'm happy to do that. I'm happy that's coming through.
The flavor explodes in your mouth and then it just really goes away. Mm-hmm. It's a quick, enjoyable taste. And then really you're left with just this. It's almost like I was thinking there was going to be more of an alcohol sensation.
Yeah.
And it doesn't hit you there either. So this place, it's so intriguing, this wine.
Yeah.
And again, that's where I go to the idea that I'm drinking a rosé whereby you go and you said, it's that white Zinfandel. It's the same thing Dawn and I talk about and have conversations with gin. A lot of people have had bad gin experiences. Mm. Well, Bartles and James, White Zinfandel, and we've had those, it's like when people expected everything to taste like Blue Nun.
Yeah.
Now what you're doing is you're re-educating the palate and the mindset of your consumer to give them that higher level of enjoyment of wine.
Well, I think the important thing you brought up there is you didn't taste the alcohol, or hopefully you don't taste the alcohol. And we never want you to taste the alcohol in any of our products. We also don't want you to taste too much of really anything. So, and what I mean by that is if it's an oaked wine, we don't want it to feel like you walked into a sawmill recently. If it is a sweet wine, we don't want it to taste like you just poured a bunch of sugar in the top of it and mix it up with a spoon. We want those characteristics always to accent what's naturally there. We don't want it to overpower. So oak does some really fantastic things. When we get to some of the reds, we can highlight that. But what it can also do is whenever you add something, it covers something else up. So you always want that nice balance. And I think that's the most important thing with wine. I can't really speak with spirits as well as brewing. But I know for winemaking, the word of the day, the word of the year, the word for always in wine is balance. So,
well, as you're speaking, I'm enjoying. But I also get this bitter note to it, almost like a dandelion. Mm. But just if you eat the dandelion green, again, it's just this wonderful balance of I get a lot of different layers, flavors, and I'm only on my first, quarter of a glass. I can't imagine what it would be like to go through the whole bottle.
Yeah.
So again, I'm here at your tasting room.
Yeah.
I had my first, I wanted my second, and now I'm thinking, all right, let's move on to the third because the enjoyment level keeps growing.
Well, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah. I think to your point too, Rich, earlier about Pinot Gris, I can see this pairing with so many different things. The rosé is one of those too, where it's extremely versatile when it comes to pairing with a dish, seasons, the whole nine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when I said earlier about how Pinot Gris is a great one to start with, but almost every time when I go out to a restaurant and I look to have multiple glasses with, different parts of the meal, my appetizer, my dessert, my main course, I almost always start with a rosé or maybe get some bubbles in there. I'm a big fan of that as well. But rosé is one of the ones I always start with. So
this is also a place where people can have parties and events and weddings. Are you booked up for the 2024 season? Are you booked into 2025? The things I've heard, Rachel, are that, everybody that couldn't get married during COVID rushed out when they finally could, and now it's like wedding season almost every weekend.
It does feel like that. We do things a little bit differently. We are essentially your destination wedding location here in Delaware County. So when people get married with us, not only do they just come and rent the beautiful barn and have their ceremony and cocktail hour reception, they stay with us for the whole weekend. They rent all of our rooms in our hotel. They stay. We do their rehearsal dinner with our in-house chef, paired with some nice glasses of wine. And then, we do the whole wedding. And then Sunday morning before you leave, we do brunch. So that, we do a lot. It takes some time. And so, we're not necessarily full every weekend because we take a lot of time and pride in planning with our clients. But also, if we did do that, you would never be able to come and stay with us. We would be full all the time. And as a traveler, someone just looking to explore the Delaware County or the Brandywine Valley, you wouldn't be able to stay because we'd always have a wedding. So we try to actually spread it out throughout the year so that we have maybe 20, 25 weddings or events, throughout that time period. So not only do we do weddings, but we do bridal showers, baby showers, birthday celebrations. That new vineyard barn that we keep talking about and referencing is another great location for you to host your intimate family gathering. Showers have definitely become, bridal showers and baby showers have become very popular to host at a venue versus at someone's house, mostly due to the COVID era where people, were scared to invite people back into their homes and things like that. So taking them to a venue that was set up to do these kind of things started after COVID, and the trend has just continued. So we host a lot of showers. Not only do we host showers, but like I said, we host any other kind of celebration here on site.
And you also do corporate events.
We do corporate. So yeah, we're busy during the week and on the weekend. So you can come bring your team who you may not see too often because you work remotely or you work, you always don't work in the office together anymore, but you get together and you are productive and then you get to have a wine tasting and Andrew will take you around our property, give you a tour, have some wine, and that's the way you end your and you're meeting, and it's that's always the most productive part.
Now, you said something that you would be full all the time and people wouldn't get to stay here. So this is a working inn still, mm-hmm. and you can book a room or you can experience a suite of rooms or whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm. And there's a restaurant on site. So talk a little bit more about what that has to offer and what people can expect.
Yeah, we kind of started categorizing ourselves a little bit more now as a boutique hotel. Just because of the number of rooms that we have, in a way, we kind of run our establishment. But, still operating in that quaint B&B in style. And if you check out our website or you look at all of our different rooms, I always say our rooms have their own personalities. They're all different. They're not that carbon copy that you'd see in your traditional hotel. Each one was very purposefully designed, laid out, again, keeping with some of the history of the location. The one cottage we have is called the Greenhouse because it used to be a greenhouse. We remodeled it to, have a restroom and some bedrooms, but you can still see the glass ceilings, the glass siding, and see its traditional, its original standing. So, like I said, you can come and stay with us. You can stay for one night. You can stay for many nights. We serve breakfast in the morning to our guests in our glass dining room off of our manor house. And we also do dinner service, so you can come and have dinner as well. We do prefix style seasonal menu that changes bi-monthly. And that dinner service is open to the public. You don't have to be staying. You can come and you live right down the street or across the road, and you can just come over and have some dinner.
As someone who happened to get married here, I may be a little bit biased, but they did a fantastic job. I highly recommend it to everybody.
Just a little biased.
All right. So Red has arrived, and this is the Grace Winery Cabernet Franc, 2021. It's a 100% estate. Yep. Everything is 100% estate, is it not?
Not quite. So we get the vast majority. We get about 40% to 60%, depending on the yields for the vineyard any given year, from our estate vineyard. And then almost everything else comes from within a 1 hour drive. I'd say the vast majority of it comes from right next door in Chester County. I don't know if you're allowed to mention Chester on this podcast.
It's Chester, a county in Pennsylvania.
It is a county.
Fermented Adventure loves all of Pennsylvania.
Perfect. A lot of it comes from the Coatesville area, as an example. We'll also go a little south and get some from Maryland. That's more recent this year. Depending on yields. Almost all of it comes within a 45-mile or 45-minute radius. Essentially, if I can go drive and pick it up with our diesel truck, I go get it.
So. Well, you opened the door a little bit there, because I think in my head, I start to think about, all right, you're keeping with the terroir. Keeping with the provenance of saying that you're not going to blend your grapes with, let's say, something out in Washington State or in Oregon or California or New Zealand, for that matter.
Yeah.
Because what is going to happen is you're going to create a whole new characteristic from that area that other grape or that other juice may be grown. So that's really interesting.
Yeah. So the vast majority are Pinot Gris, are Chardonnay, our Sauvignon Blanc, Rosé, our Dragonfly, which we'll have next, our Cabernet Franc, those are all either estate or, again, local. We do have one wine that we bring in from California, from Mettler Vineyards. It is our 1734. We bring in the grapes, and we do all the production here. And that one is simply for us to play around in. Like, I love Syrah. The boss loves Syrah. And there's an aspect of, we just want to make it for ourselves. Now, what we advertise, that one's a very important one, but we make sure it stays separate, separate but equal. The estate stuff is what's really important. The estate stuff, the local stuff, it tells us who we are. Wine over any other, probably any other product out there, really has a sense of place and space and time. So what year it was made, the vintage is always really important. The weather that it grew up in, those grapes grew up in, the terroir of the area. I mean, it's so much more important in winemaking and grape growing than any other alcoholic beverage production. So we really want to capitalize on that because there is a difference.
Our cider making friends might disagree with you.
They may. I will say
because
it's not
just as important.
So.
And one of the reasons specifically that we started bringing in grapes is because of just the production that we've been doing. From starting to host more events and see more traffic through our hotel and getting Corey to partner with offsite partners and restaurants and things like that, is we just needed to keep up. And we're at max capacity in the vineyard location that we have. We can't grow anymore. We have it all filled up in there. So we really just needed to also start exploring the area to keep up with the demand for the wine that we were producing.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because when I first started here, we were quite literally about half the size of production that we are now. So every tank is literally brimful. I need somewhere to put it. So hopefully, please come by and drink more. So I have somewhere to put it. But yeah, we just did a really big heavy bottling, so empty out a bunch of tanks. But that's one of our constraints is literally just sourcing it. You know, our vineyard did used to provide everything we needed, and then we don't have anywhere else to plant grapes, so we need to get it. And there's a lot of really good vineyards in this area. You know, some that don't necessarily have wineries attached to them. Stag and Thistle Vineyard is in Coatesville. Grows fantastic Sauvignon Blanc. That's where we've been getting our Sauvignon Blanc for the last few years before ours come online. As when you plant a vine, it takes 3 years before it comes to fruition. So with that being said, trying to highlight those varieties, those vineyards, we always kind of talk about them. We bring them up to our consumers, our customers, as again, that sense of place is really important.
Before we delve into this wine, which I get berry notes, raspberry notes for me, yeah. I just love the fruitiness on this. And this approaches me and I fall in love with this wine. And to your point about as you establish yourself as that wine that people want to go to now, that winery, you're helping the region grow as well. You're going to those other producers and say, look, we're going to need in the next 5 years, 7 years, 10 years, we're going to need more juice. We're going to need more grapes. So you're actually helping to grow the region and the economy and everything along with it. That's also a tremendously wonderful gift that you're bringing to this area.
It's a niche industry, in the whole world, let alone South Central or Southeastern Pennsylvania. So we all know each other. We're all friends with each other. We all try to boost each other's product. We give helping hands when needed. I was out of filters the other year and I needed one, and I called up a friend, another winery. I'm like, hey, do you happen to have this filter? And he's like, yeah, no problem. Come on by. And I've done the same with others. It's really a helping hand that, what do they say? Rising tides raises all ships. And we truly believe in that. I love a lot of the wineries in this area, and hopefully they're all saying the same thing about us. So
this is just a wonderful treatment, this wonderful display of fruit. And it's funny because people say, what does it taste like? Oh, it tastes like wine.
Yeah.
You know, but there's so many things to pull out of wine. And for me, I don't know about for you, what are you getting out of this wine? You have a smile on your face.
Well, it's interesting because I don't usually drink red wine. When I hear red wine, I'm like, oh, but I really love this wine.
She almost says that apologetically, doesn't she?
Well, no, and I'm more a sweet person too. And it's like, if you're a sweet person and you hear like this is a, you come here for dry wines, you have to try these wines, because the first two we had, they're not super dry, I really enjoy them and I could drink them all the time. And it's the same thing for this one. It's got a nice fruity taste to it. And like, I'm looking at this, I'm like, this is red. And I'm loving this wine.
I wonder, as you have your pulse on the industry, if the answer to somebody that says, I only drink sweet wines, really what you're really introducing them to is a way to say, well, fruity wines, bold. When I say bold, pronounced fruity flavor. The first wine we had, lemon, lime, the acidity there, that was what came out to me. Your rosé, the strawberry, this, a berry component to it. So you're not saying you, I think for people, you're not saying you like sweet wines. What you're saying is you like maybe a fruity component, you just didn't know it before.
I just hit the nail on the head. Yeah. Now I was going to say, like, when I'm at, you know, offsite, you know, generally people that don't know of us or, you know what they're having, they typically will say, I really like a sweet wine. And I'll suggest the rosé, the pinot, or the Sauvignon Blanc. And, you know, 8 times out of 10, they're like, oh, I really enjoy this. I just maybe had a preconceived notion of what I liked, the notes I've liked. But kind of to your point, Rich, you know, maybe it's just those fruit notes that you really enjoy. And then that's, you know, kind of reels you into, you know, a new type of wine. So,
And what's important, too, is also what is not too prevalent. And one of that is tannins. So there are plenty of tannins in these red wines, and that's what dries out your mouth. So when you have that big, bold red, what it's drying out are your cheeks and your jaws and your gums and your tongue. And it feels like you might put paper in your mouth or something. It feels dry. And that dissipates with time. That's one of the reasons it's nice to age a wine. So this wine right now is different than it was a year ago. I really loved how this one is aged. I love how the next one as well. But those tannins have dissipated a little bit. And with that dissipation, the other aspects of the wine are able to come out, specifically the fruitiness. Cabernet Franc, I love because it has some really unique characteristics. You can get some more earthy notes in this. This one doesn't typically have as much of that spicy black pepper that Cabernet Franc is known for, but you'll get that in Cabernet Franc a lot. This has a little bit of more of a, maybe a leathery or earthy note. Leathery you get a lot in Sangiovese, the one of the prominent grapes in Italy. So those unique characteristics that you get is what makes Cabernet Franc unique. Cabernet Franc's actually kind of having a little bit of a moment right now in the way that Rosé did. Probably not as big as Rosé, but it is having a little bit of a moment in our weird niche little industry. So
what's – you mentioned the peppery note. So what I took from this is I get the black pepper, but it's almost this play on taking a pepper grinder and grinding fresh black pepper, getting that in the nose, but also kind of getting that on the palate. That's my experience with it. And the other part about it is if somebody says, as you said, Dawn, I don't like red wines, forget the fact that you're – don't look at it. Just close your eyes and taste it, because I think to somebody that says, I'm not a red wine drinker – this is something that they can say, wow, I'm a red wine drinker now.
Yeah.
I really believe that.
Well, one of the fun things about wine is figuring out all those flavors. It's I think of the sommeliers and how they're able to really pinpoint, you know, by just drinking the wine, not having ever seen the bottle, what year it was grown, where it was grown, maybe the weather conditions in that year, cellaring practices, whether it was aged in barrels, how long it might have been aged in barrels, all of these questions, it's a big puzzle that we play. And as you get more and more introduced to wine, as you learn more and more about it, you're starting to figure out more and more of those puzzle pieces. So, when I'm drinking with some of my family and I'm like, oh yeah, this is a, oh, I don't know, this is a Cabernet Sauvignon. And they're like, oh, how'd you know that? It's like, well, Cabernet Sauvignon has a distinctive characteristics, fingerprints, a lot of times we'll say that it necessarily has. And putting that together is some of the fun that you get from drinking red wine and learning, or all wine, and learning more about it.
All right, if we had time for one more, which one should we have?
So me and Andrew, we love our Dragonfly. I think that's a good kind of idea of what our vineyard for all the reds create, and kind of a nice blend in that sense as well.
What are some of the wines that you have not released? You talked a little bit about the Syrah, I believe. Some of the things that people can expect in the future and looking forward to?
Yeah, so we just did a big bottling. So we have a new vintage of Pinot Gris. That'll probably be out in about a month or two. We have a new vintage of Rosé, probably the same timeline. We have a new vintage of Sauvignon Blanc, which I'm very happy about. I really like this new Sauvignon Blanc. We have
a new Cabernet Franc, which I am very excited about. I love how that's going to age, I think, at least as how it seems right now. That will probably be on the store shelf probably in 4 to 6 months, plus or minus. I do love to age it in bottle for a little while, as the term, if you ever heard bottle shock. It's hard to explain. It's hard to really quantify. But essentially what happens is bottling can be a harsh process. You have going through filters, going through the bottling line, getting shoved into the bottle. And it just seems to be a little disconnected. A lot of these words don't really mean anything. But for me, who I've been drinking the wine plenty before coming up to bottling, shortly after bottling, you'll pop the cork and you'll take a sip of it and you're like, this isn't the same as when I just bottled it. Well, you give it a little bit of time and it really flourishes. So it doesn't really, one of the big things is oak is really common, where right after bottling, it actually spikes. The flavor, it really comes out strong. You're like, whoa, I didn't add this much oak to it. What happened? This didn't spend this much time in barrel. And then it starts to dissipate and get back to its normal self. Our Cabernet Franc is coming out. We have our great new Gracie Red, which is our semi-sweet. That'll be coming out as well, probably in about a month or 2 months. We've got plenty on the docket. We've got a new sparkling that we sold out of our sparkling. So I'm very excited to get that.
Well, with all the weddings you're doing, I can understand why.
Lots of mimosas.
One of the benefits that wineries have is you don't necessarily need to come out with new products constantly. You get to come out with new vintages. And there really is a difference each year. And our Dragonfly Red Blend is a really good indication of that, because none of our blends are the same percentage. They're all, and might not even be the same varieties each year. This one specifically is almost a 50-50 blend of Merlot and Cabernet Franc from our estate. In years past, we've put Cabernet Sauvignon in it. We've put a little bit of Syrah in it in the past, but predominantly Cabernet Franc and Merlot. This 50-50% is different than last year, which is different than the year before, which is different from the year before. And with that, we're trying to accomplish a main goal with it. And the main goal of the Dragonfly is supposed to be a medium-bodied red, medium to light-bodied red that's easy to consume. If you're not a big red wine drinker, this is a really good one for you. It's also a really good example of this vintage specifically of the Pennsylvania terroir, specifically our vineyard. As this is 100% estate fruit from our Cabernet Franc and Merlot, it should give you a good idea of what our vineyard can do.
I'm just feeling like I'm looking out and I'm somewhere in Italy and the sun is beating down and you just brought this bottle out and I don't have wine glasses. I just have these just plain glassware that I'm just drinking. And this is an old estate where the people are humble and they're friendly and they just want you to enjoy their wine. Well, and that's the feeling with the nose. You mentioned Sangiovese, and to me, I don't know why, but this mirrors that, because I get the tannins at the end. I get the bold fruitiness on the palate, and I just want a nice, a little simple plate of pasta and just more of this out on the back terrace, and I'll watch just people getting married. Or whatever they're doing outside, I don't know.
Well, as everyone has always said, they've always called me humble. Okay. So that's definitely the characteristic. I don't want to hear that laughing over there. I love how this Dragonfly has really aged. I'm excited to see what it does in a few years. Dawn, I know you're not a big red wine drinker. This one definitely has more tannins. So
I love it.
I
think you guys converted me to red, but it's only for you guys.
Well, it's really interesting, because I would have actually expected you to say, like, no, I'm more of the Cabernet Franc. Because this is
I think I still like that one better.
Yeah.
But I do like this, and it's not overbearing for me.
Yeah. This has a little bit more of those dry notes that you start feeling on your cheeks, and it's a balance of the acids and tannins. Acid amplifies tannins, so it just makes it a little
dry.
I'm glad that's coming across. So, yeah, this is – and the only thing different from this, from the Cabernet Franc, is we add our Merlot to it. So this is a little bit more dominant Merlot in – why we love blending so much is you can have a fantastic Cabernet Franc that really stands out on its own, but that can be a little bit more rare. Same with Cabernet Sauvignon or Merlot, whatever you want to do as a single varietal. But the one benefit of blending is that sometimes a wine doesn't necessarily hold up quite as well on its own. And where it's lacking, you can really fill in those gaps with another wine. So where Cabernet Franc has those nice accent characteristics, Merlot might be sometimes considered a little bit more boring because it's mostly just a more simplistic fruit flavors. But it has more body a lot of times, a little more of a fullness to it. And you blend those two together, you get the nice accents of the Cabernet Franc while you get the fullness of the Merlot.
So. For the three of you, is there anything we haven't talked about on the podcast today? Anything that you'd like people to know more about you or the Innit Grace Winery?
I mean, personally for me, I'm someone who had no experience in wine prior to working here. Like Andrew, kind of just stumbled upon it and then just took advantage of all the resources. So I always say there's not a bad time to get started in the industry, not a bad time to learn, and just take advantage of the resources around you.
Yeah, I think that's great. We're always hiring. So if you want to come and join our team, like I said, we do a lot of different stuff. So we have a lot of different levels of employment. You know, we have hotels, so we're hiring housekeepers. We have kitchens, so we hire cooks and servers and all those great things. So if you just want to come and spend some time and make a little money doing something you enjoy, we're always hiring. But also, I think it's something you just have to come out and experience yourself. You have to come see it. You have to come enjoy the wine. You have to come try the food. You have to come spend the night. You have to come, with your friends and just have an experience. And I always tell people the best thing to do is go on our website, follow us on social media. You'll see lots of really cool things. Not only do we're open to the public for your traditional wine tasting and food service. We do a lot of events to the public. We were talking about private events earlier, but we do a lot of events that you can come and we do some wine educated based events. So Wine Club Members, which is a really cool program we have. It's a younger program, but you can be a wine club member here at Grace. You receive quarterly shipments of wine, but you get to attend member-only events. A lot of them are wine-educated-based. So you spend some time with Andrew. The last one they just did was a vertical tasting of our 1734 and our wines of the past, kind of see how it's changed over time. So we do that, and then we also do a variety of fun workshops, some classic ones like a charcuterie building workshop. We have a cookie building workshop, floral workshop, some ones that you'll see on a monthly basis. We do trivia the first Friday of every month. We do comedy night the third Thursday of every month. We do a shop local Sunday in our tasting room. It's the first Sunday of the month where we have a lot of local vendors come and sell their products here in our tasting room. So we have an assortment of jewelry makers or artists, and a lot of different artisans of any kind, and will come and sell their stuff here. And we, again, because we just like to support people out there doing the local thing. And so you can check out a lot of that on our website, on our social media pages. You can give us a call or email us, and we'll send you all the details of all the stuff we have always going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's a beautiful property. I've spoken mostly about the wine, but it is just a beautiful place to come every day for work. The grounds crew do an amazing job around the property. Our housekeeping do an amazing job. The rooms are, each one is unique. Each one is beautiful. We'd love for you all to come and stay with us. Some of our most popular clients are people who live, we'll say within 30 minutes and are coming for a little staycation. So even if you're local, come on out with us. Come stay at night. If you're a young couple, maybe give the parents, give the kid away to the parents for a night and come on hang out with us. So.
Well, this, for Dawn and I mean, we're part of that. Hey, we can come here for a staycation. Mm-hmm. And we're grateful. Thanks for being a friend of Fermented Adventure. And look, Rachel, you mentioned a whole bunch of stuff. So if you're not here just about every weekend, you're definitely missing out. Thanks for your time today. And we look forward to, Andrew, you mentioned all those releases that are coming out and all the opportunity. If you're thinking about getting engaged and you're looking for a place to get married, wedding shower, bridal shower, baby
Let's get
shower.
Married.
Oh, we got to end the podcast. That's the end of the podcast, guys. Now, we look forward to seeing you again. Thank you. Thank
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers.